Hey y'all, I'm Donna.
And I'm Carrie.
And we are Paranormal Chicks.
Sinister Sightings 349, which we may have said the wrong number last time, unsure, but this is 349. Also, the last Sinister Sightings was the 100th Sinister Sightings that Kaden, our editor, has edited.
That's wild.
That means he's been with us 2 years.
I'm glad you could do the math.
We do one a week.
Girl, don't even come at me with that, okay? But yay! Thank you, Kaden, and thank you for y'all actually sending things so we can continue Sinister Sightings.
Okay, the first one. I absolutely love your podcast. It's been my faithful companion during my second job cleaning a doctor's office at night. Sometimes the staff is still there, and they see me walking around with just one headphone in, got to be able to hear my surroundings, laughing at the two of you bantering back and forth. A while back, I told myself that once I got to episode 100, I would finally submit my story for Sinister Sightings. Well, I just finished the 100th episode today, so here I am writing my email. I know I'm far behind. I've got about 300 episodes to go. I have issues, and I have to listen in order from the beginning to get caught up, as I might miss something. But I'm getting ready for a trip to Italy, and I'm downloading a bunch of your episodes for the 9-hour flight. I'm not sure how many I'll actually get through, since I'll be taking a Xanax just to get on the plane. Sorry for rambling to you, Donna and Carrie. I just feel like I know you both. And I'm sorry for the long story, but this one I really don't share with people. It's from a morning in 2004 that changed everything for me. The story, The Man in the Yard. It's March 24th, 2004, a crisp morning in Michigan City, Indiana. I was a prison guard, a mom, and lived on a corner lot where a one-way street met an alley. That morning, my 7-year-old son and I were running late for school. To save time, I did a quick turnaround on the side street to cut down the alley behind my house. It wasn't the best neighborhood, and as we drove, I saw two women running for their lives. My gut tightened, but my son was in the car. My first duty was to get him to safety. I kept driving, glancing in my rearview mirror as they ran towards the hospital about a mile away. I dropped him off and came back home. I hadn't even taken my jacket off when I heard pop, 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 gunshots. See, after 5 years working in the prison system, you don't hide from trouble. You run towards it. It's a reflex. So I went back outside. Across the alley, two houses over, I saw my neighbor, William, standing by his car. I could only see the top of his shirt over the roof. "Hey," I yelled, "do you know where those shots came from?" He didn't look at me, didn't flinch, nothing. It was like I wasn't even there. I went inside, grabbed the cordless phone. This was before everyone had cell phones like we do now, and called 911. As soon as I hung up, that prison guard instinct kicked in again, and I ran between the two houses. And I saw him, a man, face down in my neighbor's grass. And from where I stood, I could see he had been shot in the face. The image is burned into my memory. I would later learn his name was Calvin. A woman from across the street screamed, "Be careful! The kids were waiting for the bus when it happened." Suddenly, the street was flooded with police cars. I saw my friend's husband and a plainclothes officer go into the house across the way. A cop I knew stood next to me. Then, from inside the house, two more shots. Bam, bam. My heart stopped. When the cops came out, I saw my friend's husband was okay. The relief was immediate. And then it was replaced by sheer terror. I later learned that during those shots inside, William had fired at the plainclothes officer. The bullet hit him in the cheek, and the slug lodged in his head. He was critically wounded, but he would survive. What the hell am I doing? I don't have a vest on. I ran back in my house, and the second the door closed behind me, I broke. I collapsed on the floor, sobbing hysterically. He was shot. He was shot. He was shot. My husband came running downstairs. The only word he could understand was shot. He stood me up, frantically checking me for wounds, and sat me on the couch until I could choke out the story. Soon after, we started smelling smoke. People were banging on our doors. Later at the police station, the full, horrible picture came together. The man on the ground, Calvin, lived upstairs. The two women I saw running were a mother and her daughter fleeing for their lives. The mother had been stabbed by William, the neighbor I yelled at, because he accused her of messing around with Calvin. Here's the miracle that came out of the chaos. Those women had made it to the main road where they jumped into a van of my older son's friend's dad. He drove him to the hospital where the mother in the back, literally holding her insides in, her hands clutching her own wounds, and she survived. She made it. And the final tragic acts of William, after shooting Calvin and stabbing the mother, after shooting the officer, leaving a bullet lodged in his head, he set the house on fire. And the smoke we smelled began to fill the air. He turned the gun on himself. The standoff ended not with the arrest, but with his suicide. I learned all of this in pieces. William's daughter was at the station. She found my husband worried about me. She was sorry I had to see it all. I stood in my yard unprotected and shouted a question to a man who, in a single morning, would attempt murder, commit murder, and then take his own life. In that moment, he held all the power, and I was just a mom in a jacket, late from dropping her son at school. The story in the paper was just a few lines, but for me, it was a story of a mother and a daughter running, a stranger's van becoming an ambulance, of a police officer with a bullet lodged in his head, and a man named Calvin, and finally, William himself. It's a story of how a morning that started with being late for school ended with teaching me that survival is a fragile thread connecting all of us, and that my voice shouting a question into the quiet was one of the last sounds he heard before the world exploded. Thank you for your time and for all the hours of entertainment. I have a lot more paranormal stories that I'd love to share with you later, and there are some good ones, including the story involving a Ouija board that I think you love. Just call me Tibbs. Side note, I am no longer working in the Department of Corrections. I did for 12 years.
Holy moly. That sounds so damn intense.
I can't imagine. Like, what if... Like, I just, what if something different had happened when you said, when you called out to him and we were like, did you hear those shots? You know?
Right.
But I think he was so in his zone and in his, like, as soon as you said he didn't acknowledge you, I was like, he's the one that did it.
Going back, like, where you're like, hey, I want to help these women, but also I've got to first protect my child.
Oh, absolutely.
It's like, no, you did the right thing, because even though you want to help someone, you got to make sure you're safe.
And then the trauma that would have caused your son, seeing her literally holding her insides together. Oh. You know, somebody saved her and she got exactly what she needed when she needed it. But like, I mean, you did the right thing for you and your son.
Mm-hmm. And I learned I can never be a corrections officer because I do not run to trouble.
You don't run in sentence.
Very true. Well, I might not run, but I jump to conclusions.
And I think movies have done this to us too. Like, are the people running part of it? Like, are you safe picking somebody up? Because, you know, in movies and all of that, it's like sometimes they're the bad guys too, or sometimes they're part of it. And it's like, well, you have your kid with you. It'd be different if you were by yourself. So, yeah. You know, you don't know that. And so you have to make sure that your kid's safe.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's weird, too, because, like, you seems like you know William. And so it's like you have all this, I'm sure, like, anger, but also, like, a mourning for someone that you knew and, like, what they did. But also, like, I don't know, there would be a lot of emotions attached to this.
Yeah. There's a lot of wreckage here.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, the next one. Hey, ladies, I'd like to stay anonymous. This is my first time reaching out as a longtime listener from Edmonton, Alberta. That's in Canada for those who may not know. While I have many creepy stories I could share, I've decided that my first message isn't going to be about myself, but instead a case that has been looming over my city all summer. On June 1st, a 14-year-old Indigenous boy named Samuel Byrd went missing. As of right now, October 6th, nothing has been done to search for this boy other than the tight-knit community doing frequent sweeps of the North Saskatchewan River that runs through Edmonton, hoping that maybe he was just swept away and lost, but everyone was fearing the worst. It wasn't until recently that the police have announced that the masses have been looking in the wrong spot and that we should not expect him to find him alive. The police mentioned this after months of radio silence and the public begging for more police involvement and transparency. The police here keep putting their efforts in detaining homeless people and, quote, keeping the streets clean instead of bringing closure to this whole community. People have been seen tearing down posters of Samuel, and a lot of the community here has began to form his disappearance into a joke or using it to propagate more harmful rhetorics about the Native American community here. I won't go into the conspiracy theories on who could have hurt Samuel. I will say, though, that nothing is being done, and this 14-year-old boy has practically been abandoned by the rest of the city, and it's heartbreaking. So please, anyone listening, if you know anything about Samuel Byrd and what happened to him, please contact the Edmonton Police, 780-421-2200. Please help us bring closure to this family and let that boy rest easily. Well, man, we've come with the heavy hitters at the beginning of this episode.
I don't understand people tearing down posters of a missing person.
Right?
Unless you have something to hide, like, why are you tearing down posters of mm-hmm. someone that's missing?
Like, who can have that much hate in their heart? I don't know. We just did the recording for Patreon for the Cryptid Chronicles, and it happened in the summer of 69. And I was talking about how, you know, the civil rights movement was still going on and there's so much tension and stuff. That was the summer of 69. We're now about to go into 2026 and it's still the same shit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, how? How is that possible?
Also, I don't understand. Like, the police are like, yeah, y'all been looking in the wrong spot. What do you mean? We've right. been looking in the wrong spot. How do you know that? And if you know we've been looking in the wrong spot, then point us in the right direction. Mm-hmm. How do you know it's in the wrong spot if you don't know where he is?
Yeah.
So that makes no fucking sense. Well, hopefully everybody in your community, especially those fuckers that are taking shit down, get some answers.
Yeah.
Okay, the next one. The man in the mirror and the lady by the grass. When my daughter was almost 3 years old, we had an experience that still gives me chills. She was sitting in our living room eating strawberries, then suddenly got up and walked towards the front door. She began holding out strawberries and talking softly, as if she was offering them to someone. She was looking upward, as though the person she was speaking to was taller than her. When I asked her what she was doing, she simply said she was sharing her strawberries with the man. A few days later, she woke up and walked towards our bedroom door. She stopped, stared in the mirror, and said the man was there again. When I asked her what he looked like, she told me it was the same man from before and described him as old. I couldn't help but wonder if she was somehow seeing my grandfather who had passed away years before she was born. Fast forward almost a decade. In May of 2023, we were living in Texas and searching for a house to buy. We went to see a home in the small town called La Vida, north of Killeen. Right away, something about the house felt off. It looked as if the owners had simply gotten up and left. Furniture still in place, personal items scattered everywhere, and the fridge full of spoiled food that gave off a strong, rotten smell. My daughter, who was 12 by then, refused to go inside the house and stayed outside. While we were looking around inside, I had already decided I didn't like the place. Suddenly, my daughter rushed to the front door, pale and shaking, hyperventilating, and told me there was a lady outside. I reassured her that we were alone, but she explained that she had been looking at the grass when she looked up and saw a pale, older woman standing right in front of her, who then vanished. Later, I looked up the house's history. It turned out an older couple had owned the property and lived there most of their lives. The husband had passed away about 10 years earlier inside the house. The wife had died just a few months before our visit. In such a small town with only homes, a church, and a cemetery, it seemed likely that she had passed away there too. I often wondered about these moments. At 3 years old, my daughter saw a man no one else could see. At 12, she saw a woman who had recently passed. I can't help but ask myself, could my daughter truly be seeing things that others can't? Alexandra from Tennessee.
1,000% believe your daughter can see things that others can't.
I mean, there's literally no other explanation.
How sweet of your daughters to share her strawberries. Because I'll tell you one person who wouldn't. Carrie.
I don't like to share my food. Get your own.
But then also, if I was your daughter, I would have shit myself sitting in the car And then, like, just kind of looking down, and then, bam, this lady's there. No, thank you. No, thank you. Who has that house to sell in that shape?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like why did the family not clean it out?
Yeah. Now, don't get me wrong. We've toured houses, like, when we were looking for the house that we ultimately moved into when I was a senior in high school. We looked at some really bad ones because that's what we could afford, you know, but none of them had like spoiled food and stuff still in it.
Yes.
It was just like kind of trashy, like kind of like shit was left behind, or like the wallpaper was like peeled weird and, yes, you know, stuff like that, which I understand. Those are all things that can just be done. But like, why didn't you just get rid of the refrigerator then? Like if you didn't want to open it and, you know, do all of that. Just get rid of the refrigerator. I don't know why I did it in that cadence, but whatever.
Refrigerator.
Hopefully y'all didn't take that house. Hopefully you went somewhere else. Hey, beautiful ladies. This is my first time writing in, and it will be a short one. I changed the names of the people in the story, but you can use my name, Julia. So here we go. Back around 2004, I was dating a country guy named Randy that lived in the middle of nowhere. He had a friend named Brad who lived out on a multi-generational 100-acre farm that we visited often. One night, we decided to go hang out with Brad at his house as he was working on his car. When you come down his road, you pass his workshop before you get to his driveway. As we came up to the lit-up workshop, we saw Brad working on his car and a girl sitting on his toolbox watching. She had dark hair and was wearing a frilly pink dress. We had never seen her before, and Brad didn't have a girlfriend. My boyfriend Randy laughed and said, "How does he not tell us that he has a girl over? I'm going to give him so much shit." As we pulled in the driveway, Brad comes out to say hi, but there's no girl. Randy started giving Brad trouble about keeping a girl secret from us when Brad said, "No, there's no girls here with me. I'm by myself." I laughed and I asked about the dark-haired girl that was sitting on his toolbox. He brought us into the shop and there was no girl. He said he had two spirits that hang around the workshop. One is a teenage girl and one's a man. The teenage girl just hangs out and is harmless and is seen by his family sometimes. The man is mean and throws things at Brad and his family if he makes a lot of noise. He then shows us a cistern that the workshop was built on. The cistern collects rainwater and is normally underground. The opening 100% looked like something from The Ring. He moved the lid so we could see down the dark basement-looking cistern with about 4 feet of water in it. Definitely The Ring vibes, which terrified me. Brad also said they have an overhead picture taken of the whole property and the people could be seen in the middle of the field behind the house in colonial clothing. I never saw the picture, but there was for sure something there. I never wanted to be alone anywhere on that property because of the heaviness in the air. I'm now married and don't talk to either Randy or Brad, so I'm not sure if he's still living there or if there's still activity, but I saw enough. Anyway, that's my story. I hope it made sense and was spooky enough to make the show. You ladies are awesome, and today is October 6th for those keeping track. Creep it real, Julia. Well, I was gonna ask if Brad was still single, but, you know, whatever, y'all don't talk. Blah, 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 you're happily married. But I'll tell you what, Carrie damn near creamed her pants at the generational 100 acres and a workshop.
I just want land. And my student loans paid off. Not necessarily in that order. Maybe actually in that order. In that order, actually. Yeah. In that order.
Also, like, if he said, "No, I don't have a girl," why didn't he just say, "Y'all saw her?" Like, okay, so this is what happens. But he was like, "No girl here." Boy, you know who they were talking about then.
Right.
Also, how's that man going to be mad that you're doing it in the shop? Like, that's what you're supposed to do.
I don't want to be anywhere that's giving the ring vibes. Unless you're giving me a diamond ring.
No. No, thank you. Because I don't want to fall down that well. I don't want to do anything down that well. In dark water. No, no, no.
Okay, the next one. "Hi, I recently discovered your podcast in August 2025, and your voices immediately resonated with me. I've been binging episodes while working DoorDash and attending online classes. I raised my two oldest children in Carthage, Mississippi, a small town between Meridian and Jackson. I now live in Washington, where I'm raising my three younger children, all of whom are teenagers. I'm currently listening to your December 2021 episodes, so I haven't caught up on your newer content yet. I have a few sinister sightings and true crime stories to share. True crime. My mother was one of seven sisters in a military family. When there wasn't enough room for all the children, my mom would stay with her aunt. They were very close. When I was about 7 or 8, her aunt died by, quote, suicide. However, she was found wrapped in a sheet and shot point blank in the right side of her head. There were major issues with this. She was left-handed, and her entire body was wrapped like a burrito from head to toe. This woman was incredibly generous and unable to have children of her own, adopted two daughters. These daughters stood to gain a large inheritance upon her death and, to put it mildly, treated her terribly. When my mom and grandmother questioned the suicide ruling, the coroner upheld the judgment. My family still considers the case unsolved. This occurred in the early 80s in small town Mississippi. I'm not saying the police weren't doing their job, but perhaps they just got it wrong. Paranormal. I've always wanted to believe in everything from aliens and Bigfoot to ghosts. I say wanted to because despite experiencing many things, I can't definitively say they are paranormal. That said, whenever there's a death on my dad's side of the family, they visit me. And before I see them, I see spiderwebs everywhere. I've had some experiences that are difficult to explain. One time, my son was standing in the kitchen when about half a dozen plates flew 6 feet, hitting everywhere around him, but not actually touching him. They had to lift over a lip where they were thrown hard enough to break and shatter into small pieces. When we lived in South Carolina, I had just put my two oldest children to bed and was settling into my room. I hadn't even taken my glasses off when a black man-shaped shadow walked into my room and stood there staring at me. Since moving to Washington, there have been several instances of someone climbing into bed with me. A few times they even made me the little spoon. I thought it was my husband, but he wasn't even in the room and sometimes not even in the house. When I was a baby in San Diego, California, the house we lived in had some interesting happenings. When my parents decided to move, my mom put her favorite shirt in the dryer. When she went to retrieve it, it was in the middle of the garage and had been reduced to ashes. My mom once left me in the high chair watching Sesame Street and went outside to talk to a neighbor. When she came back, the TV was on a channel that didn't exist in America and the volume was turned all the way up. It was in the mid-70s. The remotes back then were corded, box-shaped, about 12 by 8 inches, with 13 numbered buttons. I was a year old and strapped into a chair alone. No one else was in the house. When my daughter was 4 years old, she was watching Power Rangers and jumping on her bed when it suddenly became very quiet. I was 7 months pregnant at the time, so I waddled into her room to see what she was doing. She wasn't there, and we were in a second floor apartment. But I noticed the screen was missing from the window. I rushed downstairs and found her walking towards me, crying because she thought she was going to be in trouble. I was frantic because my child had just fallen 15 to 20 feet, so I rushed her to the ER. They said there was nothing wrong with her. The funny thing is, there was thick red mud under the window from days of rain, but my daughter was completely clean without any mud, even on her feet. She told me that the lady put her on the sidewalk after lowering her to the ground. She still says that she was never falling, but floating like a princess in a movie. She's now 32 and remembers it clearly. That's all for now.
All I could picture was Princess Peach in like Mario 2 or whatever, where like they just kind of like float yes. around. And she's better to have when you want like to float more in the air mm-hmm. to get those. Anyway. So you're saying all of this, but you're saying you still don't know if you believe. You wanted to believe, but you still don't know if you believe. How? All of that, I'm like, check, check, check.
Also, what? Tell me why when you said plates, I automatically assumed that they were paper plates. How did she even fall out? Like, what was she doing? I imagine that was so freaking scary. Also, why'd they burn your mom's favorite shirt in San Diego?
And I'm so sorry to hear about your mother's aunt. That is terrible.
It's less likely that a woman would use violence to die by suicide. It's not unheard of. It is less likely, but like why wrapped up in the sheet? But also, like, where was the gun? Were both arms wrapped up in the sheet? Was the gun on the outside of the sheet and her arms were on the inside of the sheet? Because that's impossible.
Oh, true, true, true. Yeah.
Like, you can't have both arms in the sheet and the gun be on the outside, but both arms be tucked at her side.
Yeah. I'm left-handed, and there's a lot of things I can do with my right hand, if you know what I mean. But, like, pulling a trigger, doing anything that's, like, strength-related that, you know, it ain't that. Like, me carrying, like, a plate with my right hand, I'm, like, shaking and stuff. I'm not used to that. So I'd say all of that, because maybe she's different, but I would think if you were going to do that, if your intention was to die by suicide, you would want to do, like, with your dominant hand and things like that.
Well, with shooting, some people that are left-handed shoot right-handed. But, like, did she shoot? Like, did she own a gun? Did she, like, how did she shoot? That would be my question.
Yeah.
Because some people, like, for me, my dominant eye is my left eye. And I had to train myself to make it my right eye. Because, you know what I mean? Even though I'm right-handed, because I was supposed to have been left-handed, my parents switched me. So, like, I want to do a lot of stuff. Like, I bat left-handed, golf left-handed, all of that. And so, like, my instinct is sometimes my left side, but I've trained myself to do stuff right-handed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, if she, my question would be, how does she shoot? She may shoot right-handed, even though she's left-handed, because it's easier. To me, that's not necessarily the end all be all of, oh, well, she was left. You know, like, yes, if she shot left-handed and we knew that before she died.
Yeah.
You know, also, did she even own a gun? Had she even shot before? Had she, you know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a lot of questions.
A lot of questions.
All right. Last one. Hi, my besties from Mississippi. I love you ladies and have been meaning to send this in for some time now. Hubs and I bought a house around 2004 or so. Our daughter was around 6 months, and I was pregs with my son. Never felt anything weird until I was working on the baby room at the back of the house. I was on a small ladder scraping the wallpaper border, and the room felt so off, like, I guess, tight and uncomfortable. Didn't give it a thought, honestly. Then, later, my son was born. All was well, but a couple of years later, I tucked him into bed. My hubs was out of town, and I was in the front room watching Grays as per usual. My son comes running down the hall screaming and crying, and I ask, "Bud, what's going on?" He replies, "My bed won't stop shaking." Needless to say, he slept with me that night. A year or two later, I was tucking him in. There was a streetlight outside his double window, so the room was illuminated. I tucked him in, and as I turned to walk out, there was a shadow figure in front of me. I'm 5'10", so the figure had to be about 6 feet tall. I could see around it, but not through it. So what do? I beelined around it and left the room. All was well. My son was asleep. There were many occurrences over the years. My hubs never saw or experienced anything. However, the kids and I definitely did. And if you look at the listing photos for that house on Zillow, you will see many anomalies in the photos. I have other stories about that house, but I will share them at another time. I adore you ladies, and thank you for what you do. Love you mucho. Alice from Illinois.
Now I'm like looking at freaking real estate in this area. Me with no intentions of moving there, but I'm like, ooh, this one has a fireplace. A built-in reading nook. I tell you what, they like blue in this area. Every house I've looked at has a blue room. But I do love a big old picture window. But the picture window of this house, because they did give us the address, but they asked us not to share it. That window on the Zillow listing looks like it. Well, okay, this is what it looked like to me. Like it had a woman in a yellow sweater standing with a baboon.
And the baboon part looked like maybe someone in a wedding dress and someone in like an orange suit to me, or like yellow suit. So I don't know.
Or it's a glare. Don't know.
Who knows? The picture does look weird, though.
5'10", are you Taylor Swift?
And I love that you're like, all's well, my son was asleep. I just freaking, you know, like when the quarterbacks are running and they're like, an alley-oop, like they twist away and turn and like don't get
tackled.
Yeah. But like, that's what I feel like you did with the, it was like, and whoop, like just go through and be like, peace out, son.
Yeah.
Sleep well. I mean, that's what I would do anyway.
Just a little bob and weave action.
Yeah.
You insert like the classic dad joke, like, oh, you want to dance? You know,
yes.
It's bad. I'm so bad. I need to stop today.
Okay. Yeah. Whew. Did you ever start? Because
that's what I'm saying. I need to stop with the terrible dad jokes today. Yeah. What was the one I said earlier? It was bad. I don't even know what it was, but it was bad.
Who knows? I know that I wouldn't want to sleep in your son's room, though.
I mean, unless it was one of those beds that you had to like put a quarter in and it shakes.
But even then, I'm just like, that just makes my belly shake more.
Yeah, I really never understood the point of those beds. Like, what does that do?
Like, it wasn't like it was, like, shaking in one spot where
exactly.
You could, like,
what, perfectly lay on it. This?
Yeah.
I don't understand.
Like, just my body shaking.
Yeah, thank you. I'm not, I probably just had some fucking champagne. I'm not trying to puke.
Exactly. Well, and also, again, my belly would shake and my jowls would shake.
Yeah.
They don't need to see that.
Yeah, my freaking fat rolls are clapping because I'm in a bed that's shaking. It's like, God, we have an audience? No, it's just my belly. Lady Gaga playing the applause, the applause, the applause.
Okay. But honestly, why was that a thing?
One of my favorite episodes. Actually, I really don't love this episode of Golden Girls, but this part of Golden Girls, they go on this vacation. And Rose booked them, of course it was Rose, this terrible spot. And all in the bed, they're like, oh, well, at least it's like this bed that shakes or whatever. And they go to turn it on. And this guy comes in and he puts his foot on the bed and he starts like bouncing his foot and singing to him. They're just laying there like, what the hell? Well, thank y'all so much for sending in these stories. Keep them coming. Send them in to us at aparanormalchicks@gmail.com. And remember,
creep it real
and don't get scared.